And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Abby Could See, was written by Mark Siegel.
He was a doctor. He could have been a teacher or a carpenter or a businessman. It wouldn't have mattered, not really. It could have been anything. His name was Abner Curtin, and he lived in New York, and he affected the lives of thousands of people. But I don't think that's the most important thing about Abby. The important thing is that Abby could see. What does it mean when you say a certain man is your best friend? But you've known him a long time? Yes. That you've been through a lot together? Of course. That you can count on him? Certainly. But I think there's something else. A friend is really a friend when he helps to show you your way through life. And that Abby did from the very first time I talked to him. We were at college together, both of us on the track team at Columbia in New York.
And they're off in the 100-yard dash, folks. Catching up on Curtin. They're spreading for the tape, and there it is. It's Baker of Cornell first, Curtin of Columbia second, and that's a bit of an upset, folks, because Curtin was ready to win the 100-yard race.
I watched Abby Curtin slip on his jersey and head for the locker room. He didn't look like a man who'd just been defeated. Something about his face made me follow him inside. Maybe even then I knew there was something to be learned from Abby Curtin. Well, tough luck, Curtin. That was a bad break.
Oh, hi. Thanks for the sympathy.
You don't seem to need it.
Well, you can't win them all, boy. You should know that.
Well, I know it, but I sure can't accept losing as easily as you seem to.
Lost.
Are you kidding? Or was that someone else out there I just saw come in second?
Oh, no, that was Curtin of Columbia coming in second.
And watching his chances for the Olympics go down the drain. And by a fluke, too. That fellow from Cornell never ran the 100 that fast before.
I know. You're new on the squad, aren't you?
Mm-hmm, just this year.
Yeah, I thought so.
What do you mean, you thought so?
I just thought so. Look, friend.
Greenberg. Joel Greenberg.
Look, Greenberg. Winning or losing doesn't count. Not that way, anyway. You'll find that out.
Winning or losing doesn't count.
Well, it's doing your best, Greenberg. That's what counts.
I suppose that's what they give the medals for, doing your best.
The medals don't count much either, Greenberg.
Wait a minute, Curtin. Let me get this straight. You mean to stand there and tell me you don't care whether you won or lost? You don't care about killing your chances to compete in the Olympics?
Of course I care. But I care a lot less about that than something else.
What do you mean, something else?
I made that fellow from Cornell run faster than he ever ran before in his life, didn't I? I ran my best, and I made him run better. We both won that race, Greenberg. Both of us. Don't you see?
I didn't understand what he was getting at, really. Not for a long time. But even then, I felt that the unique quality in Abby was his way of looking at things. It was as if he looked under the surface always, as if he looked always for the truth, the real truth.
It'll be medicine, Joel. I've about decided. Surgery, I hope.
That's great, Abby. You'll make a wonderful doctor.
Well, I'll try, Joel, that's for sure. I'm certainly glad we're going to be in the same profession.
The same profession? What are you talking about? You know I'm going to study for the rabbinate.
Well, of course I know you're going to be a rabbi. And what's a rabbi's job? Helping people live healthier lives? Right. Healing people's wounds? Check. I'm certainly glad we're going to be in the same profession.
You see, it was all one for Abby. He'd never read Maimonides or the other sages who said that a man can't have a perfect soul in an imperfect body. But something in him reached for that truth and found it. And when he'd found a truth, he would hold it, nurture it, examine it. Years later, long after we'd left school, the phone in my study would ring and Abby's voice would insist that we were in the same profession.
Is this Dr. Greenberg's office?
Rabbi Greenberg's study. Look, Abby...
Doctor, I have an acute infection of the upper intellectual tract and a clear case of allergic reaction to work this evening.
In other words, you'd like to come over and talk this evening, Abby, huh?
Doctor, it's what I've always said. You're a remarkable diagnostician.
You could talk to Abby about anything and come away with a new view. He could be amusing or he could be serious. He could be flippant or he could be grave. But whatever his mood, you could feel always his endless curiosity about the world around him. And the curiosity led him always to the path of truth. Abby could see. Years came, Abby had married and started a family. In the summer of 1942, he enlisted, serving in the medical corps, first in the States, then in England, in France, and with the 4th Army under General Bradley in the drive into Germany. Of all the impressions on an impressionable man, none cut so deeply as the day in the autumn of 1945 when Major Abner Curtin first walked through the gates of the just-liberated concentration camp at Dachau.
Major Curtin?
Yes, sir.
Have you completed your inspection?
Completed it? No, sir, but I've started.
Your findings, Major?
My findings. Starvation, Colonel. TB, dysentery, anemia, cardiovascular diseases. The whole catalog of suffering and misery.
Anything else, Major?
Yes, sir. One other thing. A very hopeful thing.
Hopeful? Among the survivors?
Yes, sir. The most hopeful thing of all. An indomitable spirit, Colonel. An indomitable will to live.
He worked with the survivors, fanning back the breath of life into emaciated bodies, speaking a language of sympathy and compassion that communicated without words. And when the first phase of relief had been completed, Abby Curtin stood once again before his superior officer.
You've done an extraordinary job, Major. Given the circumstances, a brilliant job.
Oh, thank you, Colonel.
You'll do well to get some rest, Major. You've had a trying time of it.
Rest?
Yeah.
Colonel, I don't think I'll ever be able to rest again.
I think I understand what you're feeling, Curtin. I've been inside the camp myself.
Well, Colonel, some way... Oh, I don't know how yet, but some way we're going to have to make up for what we've done to these people.
We? We haven't done anything to them. It's the Nazis who've done this.
Well, we've made a world in which there can be Nazis. We're as guilty as they are.
Major, you're tired. You're overwrought.
I'm not that tired,
What's
Colonel.
What's more, you're a perfectionist. Curtin, take an older man's advice. Don't try to change the whole world at once.
All right, I'll take your advice, Colonel.
Good, that's better.
But nothing's going to stop me from looking for a way to change it just a little bit at a time.
Change the world a little bit at a time. To try day by day to perfect the universe according to the will of God. That's really what man is placed on earth for. I don't think Abby thought about it in just that way, but he acted always as if he did. Abby could see. And the beginning of what was to be his major contribution to medicine came, perhaps, because he could find truth and accept it from any source, even in the confines of a concentration camp.
Herr Doktor Curtin.
Oh, Granny, are you back here again? I told you to rest.
Yeah, Herr Doktor, but you see...
You've been here 3 times today. Now, that's no way to get your strength back.
No, Dr. Curtin, but...
Are you taking the vitamins I gave you this morning?
Yeah, well, I take the vitamins.
Then you've lost your food ration slip, hmm?
Nein, I have it, the food ration permit.
Well, and what is it this time, Granny?
Herr Doktor, something else I wish... This, I don't want this.
The number on your arm?
Yeah, Dr. Curtin, you will take it off, yeah?
Granny, there's no way to take that off. The Nazis tattooed that number.
Yeah, tattooed. But you will take it off, Nein.
Now, Granny, you can hardly walk. You need to eat, to rest. I think I know how you feel about that number on your arm, but that's not the important thing now.
Not important. Not important, Herr Doktor.
That's an outside thing, Granny. It's on the outside.
Herr Dr. Curtin, you are Juna. Yeah.
Yes, yes, but...
Then maybe you understand. The number... It, too, is on the inside.
Yes, of course, Granny. But I studied to be a surgeon. I work on the inside of the body, you understand?
Natürlich, I understand. Herr Doktor, I tell you something. I am not a doctor, only an old woman. But I tell you something.
What, Granny? What do you want to tell me?
I tell you, Herr Doktor, sometimes you change the outside, you fix the inside. You take the number off my arm.
Sometimes you change the outside, you fix the inside. In a world in which most thoughtful people pride themselves on their understanding of the unimportance of externals, Abby could see that there was truth, too, in the opposite view. Sometimes you change the outside, you fix the inside. When Abby returned from the Army, he specialized in dermatology, that field of medicine that has to do with the skin. With the outside sheath, which, when changed, can often fix the inside, the inner life, which is the spirit of man. They came to him, the patients, with the 1,000 ailments that the skin is subject to, and he dealt with them with the skill and understanding of a human being who knows that the effects of eczema or psoriasis can be more than skin deep. He was a good doctor, and his patients loved him. And they were grateful for his gift of vision as much as his gift of skill. But he was impatient with himself, impatient perhaps with the limitations of medical science, and he pushed against the outer frontiers of knowledge in his field with a restless intellect and an enormous energy.
Yes, Dr. Curtin?
Miss Green, have the new medical journals arrived?
Yes, sir. They've just come in.
Will you bring them in, please?
Why, yes, Doctor, but...
Are you busy out there, Miss Green? Is that it?
No, sir, but you only have 3 minutes until your next patient, Doctor.
3 minutes? Miss Green, in 3 minutes, a bud can bloom, a child can be born, a continent can be discovered, or a man can fall in love. Please bring in the medical journals.
He was in a terrible hurry, but he had more time than any man I ever knew. Time to smoke 100 cigarettes a day, time to read a score of books a week. Time to build a family and see 8 patients at a time and work in community causes and collect stamps. He had time for everything. Even for facing defeat with patients who had skin conditions beyond cure.
Roger, there just isn't any way to clear up the kind of chronic acne you have on your face. Not right now, anyway. Now, let's make a pact, you and I. We'll go on hoping. Hoping and looking. Okay? I'm sorry, Mr. Sherman. The only procedure that would help is painful, expensive, and just about impossible to use on the face. No, Mrs. Haggerty, to remove the birthmark from the baby's face would disfigure him, but someone will find a way soon. Someone's got to.
Abby Curtin knew that for thousands of years, pits and scars and blemishes of the face had been the bane of patient and physician alike. Hundreds of doctors had searched for some technique of removing the blemished outer layer of skin so that new skin and a new life for the patient could be formed. Like other specialists in his field, he knew that sandpaper had been used effectively during the war to remove deep facial scars. He was familiar with efforts to use motor-powered tools to reshape the surface of an afflicted face. He was familiar with all this, as other dermatologists were. But he was familiar, too, with the voice of an old woman in a just liberated concentration camp.
You will take the number off my arm, Herr Doctor.
And he was familiar with the truths he had sought and found, the truths of his own life's experience. Perhaps this was the difference. Abby could see. He could see that there are no failures when a man strives to fulfill himself. There are only little steps toward success.
Miss Green, I want you to get some things for me at the hardware store around the corner.
The hardware store, Dr. Curtin?
Mm-hmm. Please, here's the list.
Sandpaper, grit zero, and double zero, a hand drill. I didn't know you were a do-it-yourself addict, Doctor.
I'm not, Miss Green.
Oh, you're buying these things for your kids, then.
No, not at all. On the other hand, you may be right. It may be just what I'm doing. We'll see.
Another list, Doctor?
Yes, Miss Green, still another.
The hardware store again? I think I've bought every item they sell there in the last year.
No, it's not a hardware store this time, Miss Green. Starting today, we'll see what the dental supply houses have to offer.
He worked with dentists and dental supply houses. He talked with carpenters, and he watched machinists at work by the hour. He read and studied and researched and experimented, and the days became weeks, the weeks months, and the months years. He tried sandpaper discs.
Throw them all away, Miss Green. They won't work.
He tried burrs, cutting knives, variations of everything anyone had tried before.
Well, Miss Green, we found out what won't work.
Then you're giving up, Doctor.
Giving up? We're just starting. This has been very successful thus far. You can't find out what will work until you know what won't.
The instrument which Abby developed finally, which seemed as if it would work, was a small, dime-sized, flat wire brush, driven at high speed by an electric motor. And when he was satisfied by preliminary tests that the procedure he had developed would be effective, he prepared to put it to its final trial.
You understand what I'm asking you to do, Marjorie, don't you?
Yes, Doctor. I'm willing to take the chance.
No, I'll be honest with you, Marjorie. It isn't much of a chance. If it doesn't work, there'll be no improvement in the condition of your face. But it'll be no worse than it is.
I understand, Dr. Curtin.
You're a brave girl, Marjorie. Very brave girl.
Brave? I'm not brave, Doctor. It's just that I'd do anything. Anything to have my face look like everybody else's.
The procedure was simple. Carefully, Dr. Abner Curtin sprayed Marjorie's face with ethyl chloride to freeze and harden the skin. Carefully, he brushed the defects of the skin away with the precision instrument he had developed.
Well, that's it, Marjorie. That's all there is to it.
That's all, Doctor?
That's all.
It didn't hurt. Not really.
I knew it wouldn't.
Do you think it was successful, Dr. Curtin?
I think so, Marjorie. I hope so. Now we'll have to wait and see. I'm going to take the bandages off now, Marjorie.
All right, Doctor, I'm ready.
Now, you understand your face won't look very pretty.
I understand.
There. Oh, it's as I thought.
As you thought?
Marjorie, I think our part of the operation has been a success. The rest of it's up to our partner.
Our partner? I thought you said this was all there was to it.
Oh, we've done our part of it, Marjorie. Now we have to wait for the new skin to form.
Oh.
And that's up to our partner. The partner who created your face to start with.
In 4 weeks, Marjorie's face was like other girls' faces. And a new procedure and a new word had been added to medical knowledge. Dermabrasion, they called it, a new technique for corrective plastic planing of the skin. But for Addie Curtin, it was more than that. It was a tool for making the world a more perfect place, a little bit at a time. The doctors came and watched and learned and went away to use the new procedure. More than 500 of them. The physicians who worked with the survivors of the Hiroshima atom bombing came to study Abby Curtin's method and to use it, a symbol of healing, which is the highest form of atonement. And the individuals came, hundreds of them, seeking a new life through the doorway Abby Curtin had opened. All who came, the men, the women, the little children, found him ready, ready to help, ready to understand, ready to work harder and longer than any man should. I understood his dedication, but it seemed to me that I should talk to him as a friend about the tempo of his life, and I did.
Well, what is it you think I should do, Joel? See fewer patients?
Wouldn't be a bad idea. You're running too fast, Abby, too hard. We're not on the track team anymore, you know.
We're not? Everyone's on the track team, everyone in the world. And I told you long ago, Joel, it's not who wins the race, it's how you run it.
But everyone in the world isn't seeing 8 patients at a time. Everyone in the world isn't smoking too much and eating too much and sleeping too little.
That's an interesting diagnosis, Doctor. What do you prescribe?
I prescribe slowing down, Abby. I'm serious about it.
Well, Joel, you're talking to me in my terms. In medical terms, yes?
Curious, but I suppose I am.
You're telling me that one of these days I'll have a heart attack, that I'd better live a little less to live a little longer.
Well, I didn't say that.
Ah, that's what you mean. We've always been honest with each other. Now, isn't that what you mean?
Yes, I suppose so. That's really what I am saying.
Well, now, let me talk to you in your terms, then, for just a minute.
All right, I'm listening.
I'd rather live fully, Joel. Even if it means I don't live quite as long. I said I'd talk in your terms. I will. What's the injunction? Thou shalt choose life.
Well, that's what I'm asking you to
do. Let me finish. Thou shalt choose life so that you may live, you and your seed. Well, Joel, I don't know how it is for anyone else. I only know how it is for me. I have to run the race. If I stop now, I'm nothing. That's the real death. When a man stops living life fully every minute, every second. Now, there's no promise of tomorrow, but that doesn't mean tomorrow won't come. You plant a seed. Perhaps you'll never see the tree. Now, does that matter? The important thing is that the tree of wisdom should grow. A little boy I helped to face life today, maybe he'll find the cure for cancer or leukemia after I'm gone. I don't don't see a big wall between life and death, Joel. I think it's an invisible boundary.
Perhaps you wonder why I tell you this. You see, it was the last time I ever talked with him. Abby Curtin died in 1955, at the age of 43. He was a doctor, and he affected the lives of thousands of people. But he could have been a teacher, or a carpenter, or a businessman. He could have been anything. The important thing is that Abby could see. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Charles E. Shulman, spiritual leader of the Riverdale Temple in New York City. Rabbi Shulman.
The narrator on this program has said that Abner Curtin was a doctor and that he affected the lives of thousands of people, that as a universal influence he could have been a teacher or a carpenter or a businessman or anything. But he was all of these because he was a young man of great compassion whose pity extended to everything that lives and breathes. I was his rabbi. And because he shared in the founding of Riverdale Temple 10 short years ago, our association was a close one. On many an occasion, it was possible to perceive the depth of his feeling, the intensity of his concern with social problems, the tenderness in his relationship with others. His practice of medicine, and more particularly of his chosen field, dermatology, was only a means of reaching human beings in need of help. For there is nothing more hurtful to the soul of man than a sense of disfigurement, more precious to it than the confidence that comes from a sense of being normal. Abby Curtin, in his medical practice, went beyond the call of duty, beyond the oath of Hippocrates, when he spoke to the soul of his patients while administering to their bodies. Most physicians consider it sufficient accomplishment when they heal the body of its diseases. Abner Curtin read avidly of the better literature of mankind and meditated profoundly on the things he read. He was especially fond of the great essayist Montaigne. He often said that this great French writer had helped teach him how better to probe the recesses of the heart. When he departed, in the full bloom of his years, he left a great void in our midst. For there was taken from us a cherished human being who had given warmth and color to his world. He had shown by personal example the riches with which a man can endow his years, be they few or many. His life was short, but it bore the exuberance of spirit that leaves a never-to-be-forgotten heritage in its trail. From his Jewish people, he drew his love for humanity. From his scientific training, he drew the knowledge to translate that love into action. Like a flaming meteor, he swept across our horizon and left us light for our guidance. He would have wanted his life to be so.
Thank you, Rabbi Shulman. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.